All right, so today is, I think, is going to be, in addition to my computer playing games with us, it's going to be the final class that I have planned for the aftermath of the Spanish expulsion, Sephardic Jewish experience in the next stages. I wanted to do three things today. I wanted to take a little bit of a step back and frame things. I wanted to circle back to one text that we did not yet get to from the Jewish experience in Tzfat, and then I want to talk about a few other Jewish communities that I don't have extensive knowledge about or haven't specifically done extensive research on, but I have some vague impression about them, and we'll talk about a couple of the major personalities and culture in those communities elsewhere in the Ottoman Empire. So that's going to be our three-part plan for today. So the first thing I want to do is to take that step back and to talk a little bit more broadly about something we've touched on but we haven't spoken about directly, which is just kind of globally, where did the Jews go? In other words, we've been talking about some specific communities, but I wanted to make sure that we had given it some sort of framework. And in particular, the notion that the Jews went, what? They went to Bala and to Kinwood and Wales, and then we made our way 400 years ago to these list 350, and that's where our double L's and all the other funny spellings, our local spellings that we see here come from. Alternatively, the Jews went to the Ottoman Empire in particular. And we had mentioned that they went to Portugal, but were expelled from Portugal just 5 years later in 1497. We mentioned that a return to communities in North Africa was a major destination for the Jews at that time. But what we've discussed a little bit is this notion of the Jews returning to the Ottoman Empire. We jumped into Tzfat, but I realized that we should probably take a step back and make sure that we stress that Tzfat is just one instance, really. I mean, it's Israel, it's unique, but it's really just one example of the larger point that the Jews were accepted throughout the Ottoman Empire at that time. So just a word or two about that. The Sultan then at the time was actually extremely ecstatic and excited about this decision on the part of Ferdinand and Isabella to expel the Jews. And his comment at the time was, "I used to think that Ferdinand and Isabella were extremely wise king and queen, but now I've learned otherwise," because he essentially gave up. He tossed out his primary economic resource, or one of his primary economic resources, and he simply tossed them outside the country. I've lost esteem for the wisdom of this particular power couple that I previously had, and he instead, the Ottoman Empire at that time, and for a long period of time afterward, accepted the Jews with open arms, and it became almost something akin to a golden age of the Ottoman Empire. We usually talk about the golden age of Spain. This is not quite as comfortable, not quite as productive as was the Jewish experience in Spain from, let's say, 950 to 1150, but it was a time of relative security for the Jews who finally found their way there, and so there was some sort of meaningful respite for a substantial period of time for Sephardic Jews who settled in these areas. We've mentioned Tzfat, we've mentioned a little bit Yerushalayim, although there's relatively little that's going on there, and there were other communities as well that were ultimately settled. So one classic example is, just to get a sense, is, for example, right, a place called Istanbul, which used to be called the place
Constantinople.
Right, Constantinople. So this becomes a major destination for the Jews. So just to give a sense of the map as to where we are going.
It's in Europe, actually. Barely.
Barely, right? This is exactly
it's
right.
It's only part of Turkey that's in Europe.
That is right, yeah. And you can see that on the map here. So just to get a sense, so we are, and you see this all on the map, but if we go from Spain, this is quite the journey. So Jews who are in Spain, right, and then, right, so in 1492, many of them are going immediately west, right, and then that lasts for only a couple of years. So where do the Jews then go? So one option is that they're going back to places like Morocco, which we, of course, has a substantial Sephardic presence, right, continue to have one. They go to places like Algiers, Tunisia. This is where Rabbeinu Hananel was. These are the periods that we talked about before Jews even had gone into Spain. Originally, we talked about some of the rabbis, right? Morocco, Fez in Morocco. Fez up here, right, was the hometown of the Rif, of Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi. So you have Sephardic Jews going back to communities that they had lived in previously. I don't believe that they had lived in Casablanca, but that did because there was a small Jewish community there. And they went to some of these other communities here in North Africa. So that was one major destination for the Jews at that time. The alternative was for Jews to go other places in the Ottoman Empire. I believe, was Egypt part of the Ottoman Empire at that time?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I want to say that it might have been. So you have another flourishing Jewish community. You continued to have a flourishing Jewish community in Egypt, and that was also a destination for some of the refugees from Spain. So some of them made this trip where they came around to Egypt. Rav David ben Zimra, the Radvaz, we had mentioned, is the chief rabbi of Cairo at the time. So this remains a substantial Jewish community. Of course, we've talked about the Jewish community going to Israel, to the north, and to the heart. And then another option for the Jews, option as it were, they were fleeing for their lives, they had no clue where to go, they just went east. And they knew that they had been accepted. They heard rumors that they'd be accepted in the Ottoman Empire, so they came. So Turkey became a major destination, as well as did Greece. All right, so we're coming to the eastern parts of Europe. So the migration is going, right, some Jews actually are managed to travel through Western Europe. Right? I think that was the common way that they traveled to these communities. So they actually cut through. Now, this is a very dangerous journey. And this is also a complicated journey because Jews are no longer allowed to live in places like France. Again, we'll come back to Italy. There were some who settled in Italy, but that wasn't a major Sephardic destination. There were more who went to places that was not in the Ottoman Empire. Greece was, and Turkey was. So, and if you'll notice, if you zoom back in on Istanbul, so that is closer, right? That's as Jerry had mentioned, right? That is an area that's a shorter journey for the Jews, and that's sort of on the way into the mainland of Turkey. Right?
I have a question.
You see it there.
If it was such a dangerous journey to go from Spain, a land route, yeah, to Turkey and Greece, why didn't they take a boat?
Some many
boat
of them
from
did.
The Mediterranean. It would seem to be
many of them did that as well.
Less risky.
Many of them did that as well. It may have even been more common. You're absolutely right. And where are the Jews settling in these parts of the Ottoman Empire? So I want to talk about a few of the prominent destinations. One we just mentioned, Istanbul. Izmir, down here, became a major destination for Sephardic Jews at this time as well. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then you have as well in Greece, what communities we've already mentioned, and we'll go there now. The most prominent was Salonika. And here we are.
And Thessaloniki is the same as Salonika.
Yeah, those are the same location. I'm not sure the exact. I think one is just westernized and one is and one is Greek, I believe. But this gives you a sense as to where we are and where we are relative to Istanbul and to Izmir and to the rest of Eastern, Central, and Western Europe. Okay, so again, it's far from Istanbul, but it gives you a sense as to where they're settling. So these became some of the major communities. You also have Jews who are living in this area, around Bosnia. In fact, some of the rabbis in Greece and Turkey received questions from Jews who were in the Balkans. And that's not uncommon. There were communities. So these were some of the places where Sephardic Jews found themselves. Fascinatingly, growing up in going through grade school and all these things, you don't hear very much about these things. I don't even know how many of our Sephardic students who are growing up in an American milieu or in an Israeli milieu for that matter are hearing about these communities. So I think it's important to recapture them and to learn a little bit more about them. Many of these communities continue to have substantial Jewish populations even through World War II. It's not uncommon, or certainly till the fall of the Ottoman Empire, which is certainly the case in Salonika. I think I had mentioned in a previous week that I remember probably 15, 20 years ago being at a community Holocaust memorial program on Yom HaShoah, and happened to be that the keynote speaker spoke about the destruction of the Jewish community in Salonika. As a lost community. So these are communities that have had substantial, some of them have had substantial Jewish presences all the way through the 20th century, which I think is really fascinating. Now, these communities didn't view themselves, one as Turkish, one as Greek, and so on and so forth. They viewed themselves as Ottoman. And so, for example, there is a chief rabbi of the Ottoman Empire And this is an official position that's filled by, just like in other faiths as well, that's filled in this case by a rabbi who was appointed to this position throughout. That was true prior to 1492 and was true subsequent as well. So this is the place Jews are respected. Jews are treated, I don't want to say fully as full-class citizens, but it's not necessarily all that different from Jews in lands of Islam at other points in our history. You know, the more positive experiences that we've had. So Jews are paying a special tax, but they're a protected group. They're well-respected for their economic input. Jews achieve high levels not just as chief rabbis, but also similar to what they had done in Spain. They achieved high levels in the government and filled prominent and influential positions. There was anti-Semitism. There were some issues, but overall it was a relatively secure existence. So Jews were able to find something and to thrive and to bring their traditions and to develop new traditions this time.
Do you think that has something to do with the fact that the Turks as a people embraced Islam relatively late in history, and the fact that they were not Arabs, and therefore they didn't have the centuries-long tradition within Arab culture with the Quran and the idea of the jizya and all of the and the Sharia law, and how the Arabs tended to enforce that more strictly than the Turks?
I am utterly unqualified to say. I have no idea.
I know that they became Muslim.
That is,
it wasn't until like the 13th or 14th century.
That is accurate.
And so I just thought that since it wasn't the long history of Islam within Turkish culture,
mm-hmm.
that perhaps
you're saying we know that there was violence from the outset. Yeah,
yeah, they didn't enforce some of the more traditional.
I'm not sure.
You know, Islamic restrictions on Jews.
It's possible. It's hard in this milieu. It's difficult to separate the scholarly analysis from some of the polemics that we hear all about us. But I'm really not qualified to say it, but it's an interesting thought. I really don't know. So again, even up in Svat, that's part of this empire, and that's part of this group. And so what I want to do is, in a few minutes after finishing up Svat, I want to talk a little bit about Turkey, about Constantinople, and talk a little bit about Salonika as well, just a few of the personalities who rose to prominence in these communities, but I did think that it would be worthwhile to kind of take that step back and take a look at this from a global perspective. That's the map. Okay. And by the way, you can start clearly if we add the Ashkenazic experience, so the notion that we went east, right, is pretty overall, as a people, with the exception of those in North Africa, right, is pretty straightforward here. Right? So we don't have all the migration routes mapped out here, but essentially what you have is Sephardic migration routes that go, right, that go a little bit south, and that go, right, and they go to they go further east and south to some of these communities here in the Ottoman Empire. Right? And then of course the Ashkenazic Jews are going to go from places like France and Germany, and they're simply going to cross the borders and move over to places like Austria, Hungary, Poland, Ukraine, and so on and so forth. So this is right. So you have the Ashkenazic Jews staying north, right, moving eastward. You have the Sephardic Jews predominantly moving northeast. You have the Sephardic Jews predominantly moving southeast. So the oversimplification that we moved east as we entered into the early modern and modern periods is an oversimplification, but as a general matter, is largely true and is a fair one. And so the story of migrations is really exactly that story of migration. Interestingly enough, the Jews who started off in colder climates tended to stay in colder climates. The Jews who started off in warmer climates tended to remain in warmer climates as well, which I think is just an interesting phenomenon as well. By the way, we're not going to talk about too much about the culture. I honestly don't have the expertise in the Turkish and Ottoman culture to weigh in heavily. It's clearly, we are in an Islamic culture, and the garb and so on and so forth definitely reflects that. But a major innovation in the 17th century, if memory serves, is that I believe that coffee was first introduced to the Jewish community, right? Introduced in general, first in, I think, Egypt, but ultimately to the Jewish community, I think, in Turkey, and also in Egypt around the 17th century. And one of my favorite pieces of historical analysis is written by a scholar who suggests that the rise of the availability of coffee in these communities in the 17th century is closely aligned with the rise of the minhag to stay up all night on El Shavuot. So there is clear and strong and persuasive evidence about that correlation.
I heard that she was doing shalosh seudot.
So when Professor Levine came, right, Rabbi Weider's wife, right. She spoke about this. She's a cultural historian of early modern Jewish history.
She gave out an article on it.
She's written an article on this. I haven't seen her article. There's another prominent historian who's written on this. So she's a Chabiba's great. Actually, I took a course with her as an undergraduate many moons ago. So, good times. She is interesting. She's more of a social historian. Mm-hmm. So that's her interest. And we were really interested in the intellectual side of history. And we kept on trying to, you know, urge her to focus more of our time and energies on the intellectual history. She did a little bit, but, you know, scholars like to talk about what they know about. And for good reason, but she really gave me an appreciation also of the richness of the life of a social historian who looks at these things. So I had some really great formative classes, one with her on the medieval side, even though her area, she does, she's both medieval and early modern, but that course was a medieval course. And then there's another woman, Deborah Kaplan, very bright, very accomplished. She was at YU. I think she took a position, a Bar Ilan tenure track position there. She has expertise in early modern Jewish history. Fascinating stuff. 16th, 17th century, more the Ashkenazic experience. She's done some really interesting work as well. So some really interesting courses and material that I learned with that.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have a little bit of emergency.
Okay, I'm gonna pause this. Excuse me one second.